Okay. So let me first make a slide what P5 prime is. Not sure that this is really very helpful. So you write your rate. D4, so the 4 differential in the angle of the lepton here and the lepton of the K, and then the angle between the two decay planes and the Q squared, so invariant mass. And if you do this in the massless limit, so the lepton masses are set to 0, then you, I think, get 11 different coefficients. Okay? And P5 prime is then, or these P prime coefficients are defined like the original ones, which are called S here, and then you divide by the square root of FL times 1 minus FL. Okay? And if you look at, so LHCb has measured various of these coefficients. For example, FL, they have measured S5, I think, and even more. Yeah? And then you can, of course, do a global fit to them. P5, so this P5 observable have been introduced because in this ratio, the form factors essentially drop out. Okay, good. And then they are called form factor free observables, means that in principle, they are theoretically extremely clean. Okay, but that's not true everywhere, yeah? Only in a certain phase space region, and I will come to this. Yeah. And you also see that, I mean, the same physics or similar physics is, for example, also captured by S5 instead of P5 prime. And if you analyze data there, then the discrepancy is smaller in S5 than it is in P5. Okay. Okay. And yeah, so example, this P5 prime is very sensitive to the semi-Lyptonic operators, like the vector operator, the axial vector operator. Okay. And that's also a little bit dangerous because shape psi, yeah, decaying to mu plus mu minus, is also gives you a vector current. Yeah? So you might also measure this. Yeah? So you might measure QCD instead of new physics. Yeah? Okay, good.
And the other ones don't get perturbed by that interference?
Yes, they do get, but some are essentially zero in the standard model, and then they get extremely small corrections to this. Yeah, but you don't see it, and some of them are very sensitive to this kind of new physics. Okay, I have some plots where I could show, but I mean, okay, good.
Is there an unprimed variable as well?
No, I'm not sure why the authors called this P5 prime. Well, what the prime really means. Okay, that's
okay.
You have to ask. Kim, Matthias, and company. It's a very stupid notation. But don't quote me on this, okay?
You mean recorded?
It's a very intelligent notation, but it's not good for stupid people, okay? Good. So let me back up a little bit and talk about what Sheldon already told you. And I think he told you that flavor physics probes very high scales, and that's certainly true. But I would like to do this in a different way. I would really like to compare it to what most of you guys know, namely to Higgs physics. Okay? So everybody knows LHC has seen the Higgs. Atlas and CMS did a pretty good job, and they provided these measurements of the signal strength of the Higgs. Okay? And if you combine this, then you find that the signal strength is 1.1 plus minus 0.1. Yeah? So it's a 10%. And it's extremely compatible with the standard model. Okay? Good. So what can we learn from this? Okay. So let's, for example, look at Higgs to gamma gamma, also rather fashionable these days. Okay? And I simply draw some kind of new physics loop, and then I estimate that. Okay? So what will new physics give me typically? If it decouples, okay, I will get the 1, that's from the standard model, and then I get plus minus v squared, the Vf squared, divided by the new physics scale, times a factor n. Okay, this factor n can be different, can be 1, or can be large. For example, if you have strongly coupled theory or a lot of particles with a lot of charge. Okay, but since I know that this is something like 10%, yeah, I can compute the scale. Okay, if I take n equal 1, I get 800 GeV. If I take n equal to 4 pi, okay, that's just a theoretical number of a big number, then I get 3 TeV. Okay, so with these measurements, what you're probing is roughly TV, or if you have a strongly coupled theory of, or a lot of stuff, you're probing free TV. Okay. Now, if you improve this, yeah, but let's say you can measure this up to 5%, you will gain a square root of 2 in lambda, okay, but not more, and that's probably it. Yeah, so you can probably probe up to say 4 TV or 5 TV indirectly, yeah, but that's what you can do with Higgs physics at the LHC. Okay, good. So we do the same with flavor now, and the Higgs measurement in flavor, I think, is the B sub S mu plus mu minus, okay? So it was really an impressive achievement, I think, of LHCb and also of CMS, seeing this and measuring it very close to the standard model. So again, if I compute the signal strength, it's roughly 0.8 or 0.79 plus minus 20%, okay? So it's a little bit below the standard model, but it's also very competitive, I mean, very close. Okay, good. So now I can do the same, and I can compare. And now, of course, it depends what I assume, or what kind of new physics I have. Okay, but in the case of Higgs to gamma-gamma, I know it has to proceed through a loop. And then, of course, there's still the question, how many particles and how do they couple? Here I have two possibilities, or in principle more, but there's one, for example. I have a set prime that changes flavor at tree level, so I can draw this tree level diagram. And then I get this result. Again, I get V squared over lambda squared, but I get the CKM structure and the loop structure of the standard model like that. Okay. And then I can put again numbers, and what I find is something like 50 TV. If I assume that that's an anarchic tree, so no coupling one and three level, okay? Three, but V coupling, okay? Good. Of course, it can also be different. Namely, I have minimal flavor violation, which is I have new physics. So I say, for example, the MSSM, I change the vertex BS to Z at one loop level, okay? But I have really CKM structure, then I get one plus minus V squared over lambda squared, okay? And then this gives me something like 600 GV, okay? And that's very comparable, yeah, to what you saw in the Higgs case, okay? And that's kind of the worst case scenario, yeah? So this is really assuming that you have flavor violation like in the standard model, okay? Good. Okay, so here's the upshot of this little exercise, that even the most pessimistic scenario, it is minimal flavor violation, the LHCb sensitivity and also the sensitivity of CMS at your new physics scale is comparable to what we know, what you can extract or learn from the Higgs couplings, okay? Good. And like in the case of the Higgs, we are now really in a precision area, okay, and I will show this. Yeah, so this P sub S mu plus minus is really a precision measurement that is better, for example, that Z to BB bar from LEP, okay, if you look at couplings, okay. So at the end, okay, we have to measure better and we have to predict better. Of course, there can be still room for surprises that something that we have not measured, yeah, is very large, and then we are lucky, okay. So let me give you one example of flavor precision tests, again making the link to collider physics, yeah, to high PT physics, okay? Let's assume we have anomalous top couplings to the Z, okay? And I can use higher dimensional operators, which were introduced by Buchmüller and Wieler, and also studied by this Polish group later on, and by many other people, of course. And in order to describe this, I only need three operators, okay? I need these two guys include left-handed field, okay? Left-handed doublets, so they have both tops and a bottom. And then there's a right-handed operator, okay? So it's a small number of operators. Good. So now what I can do, I can break electric symmetry and go to the broken phase and see what do these operators do to my coefficients, okay? And I see, for example, I get change the left-handed coupling, okay? And I will also change the right-handed coupling, and there's also change these couplings here, okay? So the Z coupling will be changed, but I also change the W coupling because they come in an SU2 doublet, okay? Good. So the left-handed Z coupling gets this, that gets the sum of these two coefficients here. And I can, of course, probe them, for example, in E plus E minus going to Z to BB bar, or also in flavor changing delta F equal 2 transitions. Okay. This guy here changes the coupling between the top left and the bottom left and the W, so I can probe it in single top. Okay. So precision measurements essentially tell me that this coefficient has to be 0 or very, very close to 0, yeah, because I don't want to, for example, screw up my set to PV bar measurements. Okay, so this coefficient is essentially has to be 0, so that's why I call it closed couplings. Okay, similarly, from single top, I know that this has to be very small. Okay, good. Still, I have can change two couplings, this one here, the right-handed one, and I can, instead of taking the sum, I can take the difference of those. Yeah? This is, again, a free coupling. Good. And in fact, so that is the one that enters the set to TT bar, and that's the right-handed, which just gets the Wilson coefficient of one of these operators. And these guys, I can probe. For example, I get a contribution to the set self-energy, meaning I get a contribution to T, okay? And I can also attach a W, yeah? And then I get the flavor change to a WH change. I can probe this, for example, in S to D, and then the set decays to neutrinos, and this gives me K to pi nu nu bar, for example, okay? Of course, I can also test these couplings if I really produce TT bar in association with a set. Okay, good. So now this is what you get from indirect tests. Okay. So here is one coupling to the left-handed ones. So this the singlet coupling. And here's a right-handed coupling. And it's normalized by its proportion to V squared over the lambda squared. And then, since they are normalized dimensions, okay, so these operators do run and their poles, you also get these logs here, okay? That's a loop effect. You don't have to do it at tree level, okay? So here are the three different constraints that these authors showed. So it's B sub S mu plus mu minus, it's this red band, okay? Then there is the shift in the left-handed coupling to Z B bar. And you notice that this constraint is by now better. So if you would have done this before LFCB measured this, it would have been exactly the opposite. Okay, so that's, I think, is a really a big achievement. Yeah, because you now know that the left-handed coupling to this better from B sub S mu plus mu minus. And there's also a rather precise constraint from delta rho, so the rho parameter or T, okay? And if you see, if you combine this, you get this ellipse, okay? And that here's the standard model, so it's 0, 0, okay? Good. And that is current measurements, okay? Good. So now we can combine this, okay? And that's a plot that I made. So there's, of course, people studied this also for the LHC, and there's one calculation, for example, that did this in the effective theories by these two gentlemen. And if you focus first on these blue ellipses, so this is direct constraints using 300 or 3000 inverse femtobarn. And you see you can get bounds on this, but it's not extremely strong. Yeah. So if I compare this to this indirect bounds, you see that these are much stronger at present. Okay, good. Of course, this doesn't mean that you shouldn't measure that. Of course, you should measure it, because I can imagine that indirectly you have some cancellation at work that make this bound not being there. Okay, but still, I mean, I would not bet money on this that you see something here. Yeah, you probably don't really have the sensitivity, yeah? Because typically, if you have more flavor violation, then I mean, this would be even stronger. Yeah? Rather than weaker. Okay. So it shows you, and you can do a similar exercise, for example, you can look at gauge boson couplings, etc., etc. Yeah? So, and you always get, even if I start with a flavor trivial theory, since I have W exchange and so on, yeah, I will generate flavor effects. If I start at a high scale, and then through mixing of operators, you will always generate through W exchanges. A flavor non-trivial theory. Okay. And this is a very nice, this is the example, I think, where you get the strongest constraint from flavor compared to LHC direct constraints.
Okay.
So that's what it was kind of the first point that I wanted to make. Second point is there are a bunch of flavor anomalies, which I have listed here. Okay. This is a kind of a personal, it's a rather opinionated plot. So, I mean, the significance maybe not so much. So here's the significance versus the theoretical cleanliness. Okay, that is really a little bit up to me. Yeah, where to exactly put these things. Okay, that you can also change this. Some things are difficult to change, so I think Higgs to mu tau is probably has to reside here. Yeah, you can't put it here. Okay, so let's go through the list. So Higgs to mu tau, tau mu, that has been already mentioned. RK has been mentioned, and these are rather clean. Yeah. Then there's this guy here. This is a like sign du muon asymmetry measured at the tevatron by D0. This is, I don't know, experimentally not so clear, at least not to me, what they really measure. But it's if you look at the numbers, the largest.
But it's also contradicted by LHCb.
Well, to some extent, yes.
To a large extent.
And theoretically, I have no idea how you would get that. But okay, the number is as it stands, yeah. But I think they don't really know what they're measuring, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. But this is the largest. But I will not say anything about it. I think this is not a sign of new physics. Okay, good. Then there's what also Sheldon mentioned. This B to D mu plus mu minus is also slightly above what you would expect in a standard model, but very small. Then there is anomalies in the B to D and B to D star tau nu. Then there's P5 prime. Then there's a long-standing issue with both VCB and VUB, where the inclusive and the exclusive extraction differ by 2-3 sigma. I will also not say anything about that. Then there's B sub S to phi mu plus mu minus, and this can be related to P5 prime and to RK, and I will dwell a little bit on this. Then there's, of course, long-standing G minus 2 muon, which, yeah, okay, maybe Kirill can say something about that. I will not say something about it. Then there's also something which has come up recently, that is epsilon prime epsilon, so that's a CP violation in the kaon sector, where now really lattice made progress. And if you take this data, and then you see that there might also be a deviation. Okay, good. Or at least some.
Normalize that?
Sorry?
How many observables don't have anomalies?
How many? Now, many don't have it. Very many don't have them. Okay. And I think some of them I would be. Okay, this, I mean, I think it's not significant. That is probably not experimentally settled. These, I think, are theoretical. Probably errors are underestimated, both in the exclusive and inclusive side. This, I don't know. I mean, for some of them, for example, I mean, some of these guys, yeah. For example, if you have really lattice determinations will improve, okay. And in particular, for epsilon prime or epsilon, it is clear that sooner or later they will have, or they have already now numbers, yeah. And in the future, they will become better, okay. And that's the only way you can do that. And this would be a very nice measurement. I mean, there's already a measurement, but also a very nice lattice measurement because it's extremely sensitive to electric physics, okay. Also in G minus 2, people try to do some of these hadronic effects on the lattice. Again, it's very difficult, but there might be an answer at some point. Okay. For other things, I mean, of course, VUB, VCB, and so on, and also this likes and muon CP asymmetry. If you look at new physics models, you don't really find an explanation. Yeah? So if you take all this data together, all the inclusive, exclusive modes, you see whatever you put can't really explain it. So I would be a little bit doubtful then. Okay.
Is there any reason you didn't include some of the old B in ZDK from just four backwardation?
Set to BB bar?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's also long-standing, and it's, yeah, no, clearly, yes. And of course, that if we, when people always talk about that the standard model works so fine, this is always not really, doesn't work so fine,
right.
Yeah. And it would also point to a different W mass or a different Higgs mass or whatever you want to interpret.
Well, but also GV and,
Yeah.
Significant amount.
No. Yeah, but it's clear. Set to PB bar is a long-standing issue, which is at the free sigma level or something like this. And of course, if you make a SUSY fit or so, then you never get this really. So,
exactly.
Yep. Yeah, clearly. And okay, I don't know really. I mean, yeah, theoretically, this is rather well understood, I think, up to two loop level now. And okay, and nobody can do the measurement, right? So it's unfortunate, but certainly it's one on the list, and it's a strong constraint, or can be a strong constraint on new physics model building if you change the left-handed Z coupling. Clearly. Okay, good. So I will only discuss anomalies in the B2S LL sector, but if you have questions, I have some backup slides, so I can say something about this other stuff. Good. So here, this is this infamous P5 prime. And if you look at these two bins here, then you get something like 3.7 sigma if you compare it to the standard model prediction of these of this group here, okay? So let's look a little bit in, if I then pull up the talk of last year of Kim Matthias at the Electrique Morion. He gave the prediction in this bin 4 to 6 GV squared, okay, which is not even the closest one, so that's one, the one here. Okay, it's not even the one that where the shape size sit. And he has a, then he quotes different errors. Okay, so and I sorted them. So the biggest error is from long distance CC bar effects, and I will discuss this a little bit. Then there are factorizable power corrections. Then the form factors and non-factorizable power corrections, they're very small. Due to the choice also of this P5 prime variable, and there's a parametric uncertainty which is right in the middle. Okay? But that CC bar long distance effects are really the largest. Okay? And they are, I think it's fair to say, the one where theory is the weakest. Okay? So the first question that you of course can ask is, should I treat these as Gaussian errors and then, you know, add them in quadrature, they get 13% uncertainty, or should I add them linearly? Traditionally, they do it like that, but of course, since these are all theory errors, and you will see that some of them are really not, I mean, they're guesstimates, not really estimates even, you of course can ask yourself, does it make sense? Okay, good. So let me talk a little bit about the largest one, so CC bar. So in an ideal world, it's very simple. You would compute the rate as a function of the invariant mass of the muon pair, and you would see this here. You would see a little kink here once you cut the CC bar loop, okay? But it will all look very nice. Okay, that's what you get. The pair's nature is kind of mean, and you get this. So you get the shape psi and the shape psi prime, or 2s, and so you get this, and you get also the higher resonances, okay? And yeah, that's how it is. In fact, you can learn even more about the resonance structure here if you use best two data, and I will come to this. So in practice, it even looks much more wiggly than I drew it, okay? And that's work that Zwicky and his student did. So that the blue line is a prediction based on factorization, and these using best data, and this other one is what LACP sees. Okay, and you see that you're not fitting at all this resonance structure, yeah, but it's exactly the other way around, so that's why they called it topsy-turvy, I think. Okay, good. Of course, that is not, I mean, that this happens is maybe not very surprising. So I think you would expect a breakdown of factorization. So what you can relate is you can relate diagrams like this here, yeah, to the self energy, yeah, the vacuum polarization, and you can do this in a fully non-perturbative framework. And then using dispersion relation, you can extract, and that's what Roma did, best two data, and you can extract this here, and you can put it into your prediction. Okay. However, of course, here we have leptons, yeah, and the gluon coupled doesn't couple to leptons, but of course we have quarks here, so you have gluons that couple to the quarks. So there is of course other diagrams where you have interaction between the spectator and the CC bar loop. Okay. So unfortunately, again, you cannot really relate this, and this will break factorization. Okay. And since we are talking about very low energies, it's clear that it's not a big surprise that all this factorization doesn't work at all. Yeah. So, but the question is really, how bad is this? So if we extrapolate out of this region here, how big will this shape size and these Chamonix resonances affect the low Q squared spectrum? Okay, that's the question. The question is not really what happens in here, because you can't compute that, but the question is what happens here.
Is it clear how this non-factorizable effect scale with one over with the mass of the charm? Can it be that they are 1/2 MC suppressed?
There are certainly power corrections that are suppressed, but there are certainly also, that there's no duality and so on, yeah? So you can try to, and then we'll come to this, you can try to model that, but then, there are models by, for example, the one that everybody uses, the one by Kocher-Mirian, yeah? And but then you don't really know how big the uncertainties are on this.
Okay.
Yeah. In particular, you don't know. I will come to this a second. So there are certainly power suppressed corrections, but nobody knows how to compute them. Okay. So the thing is that from first principle, you can't really do such these computations. But you can certainly write down models, and you can try to calculate the size or the pollution and use this information to arrive at the guesstimate of the theory uncertainty. Okay? But I think it's really a guesstimate and not. So that's what I get. Okay? I use this paper by Kocher-Mirian that everybody uses essentially. That's a light consum rule calculation. And. The important point here is that what you also don't know, and you have to put this into the calculation, is whether these resonances, so the shape psi, they interfere constructive or destructive. Yeah. So essentially, there's a phase between this contribution and the rest of the standard model, and you don't know the phase. Okay, good. And in the paper, they choose one phase, but in principle, it can be any phase. So the two strong cases or the extreme cases are constructive interference or destructive interference. And you see that, so that's this kind of the central, this is the theory prediction without these resonances. And then you see if I have constructive interference, you get this here, okay, the deviation would grow. But if I have destructive interference or a phase between these things of a pi, then you improve the data. Okay, so it comes closer to the data points. Okay. And what I did is I essentially took this prediction here plus uncertainties, and then I take the maximal values and I get these two points.
And these predictions for the slope QB, I mean, this is very accurate, right?
So well, the slope is accurate, yes.
The lowest QB, I mean.
Yeah, here I think you shouldn't really take this. Here you should ignore that, because there can be light resonances and so on. Yeah, yeah. So it's true that if I push this up a little bit, yeah, then it looks okay. Okay, and you see also that the deviation only comes from these two bins, and you also see that predictions make some kind of sense, because the effect of this resonance is larger, closer to the resonance, and becomes less and less important. Okay, good. But I mean, I think this is only that's something you can use to guide the eyes. Yeah. So if I take this, then I get an uncertainty of 40% in bin 4 and 5. This is as large as a theoretical error that people typically quote. Yeah. By now, everybody includes this, but the groups, for example, they don't. They take only the central values that is given in this paper, but they don't take the error for whatever reason.
Okay. How did you come up with an error on it?
I took the errors that is in Kochemir and et al.
Okay, but they didn't go out. Did they go out in the
front? Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good. You can also use this topsy-turvy analysis, and this essentially this fudges the prediction that you get here onto this perturbative region. Or, and then you will get the huge effect, so there will be no effect left. Yeah? So essentially, this puts it all here. But that's really completely ad hoc, I think. More ad hoc than this. Okay. Good.
Does have to be constant in Q squared?
No, no, exactly. That's of course, a point. So there are power corrections that are constant in Q squared, but that would be something that has a Q squared dependence, right? And that's what you want to get out of the calculation.
Okay. I'm just saying, if you're on the dotted line of the high bins, do you have to be on the dotted line at the lowest bin, or are there?
And so this bin, I think you should not take seriously. Yeah, that's what they also say, the GIF prediction, but then they say, don't take it. I simply took it. Okay. I should have dropped it. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I think this is the interesting region, really. Yeah. Here. Essentially, the theoretical cleanest region is here in these two bins. Okay, if you go really too close to the shape side, then I think you shouldn't really do that. Okay, and it was done so that the LHCb at the first binning is stopping at 8.64 GV squared. Yeah, so very close. Okay.
So when you said there is no duality.
Yes,
it's absolutely clear that there is no.
Yeah, there's a paper by Martin Benecke, Matthias Neubert, and.
So what is the mechanism of duality?
Essentially, what the difference is that in one case you measure the magnitude squared, in the other you measure the amplitude, and then you can show that you have really duality violation. Yeah. So you can. Yeah. I mean, close. You cannot really compute shape psi, right?
Can I compute integral over the
JPSI region? Even this you can't, yeah, because it's you can do it at the high Q squared. If you integrate over it, then you can show that the duality violation is small. It's a paper by again Buchalla and, but not JPSI. Okay. Okay. So what does this tell us? I think, and that's really only an exercise. I mean. I think that theory maybe in some cases are underestimated by how much is however hard to say. And okay, one thing that one certainly could already gain something is if you could pin down interference, yeah, so whether long distance effects and short distance effects are constructive or destructive, yeah. Because if I could see that, for example, constructive, then I could say, okay, it goes in the wrong direction. Okay, I don't know by how much, but it's certainly not improving anything. Okay, and the question is, can you extract this in any way? Okay, good. Let's go on. So RK anomaly, again, that's 2.6 sigma. It's less, but it's also theoretically much more clean. There's another thing that has been done by Bell. But they only made it to a thesis. Yeah. So they looked into this in the inclusive case. So they measure this for B2XS, so the X inclusive, and they measure the same ratio integrated from 1 GV to GV squared to 6 GV squared in Q squared. And they find an even larger, if I take these numbers, they even find 3.9 sigma. For some reason, this is never mentioned, maybe because it's only a PhD thesis. And here I can compute roughly the effect. Okay, so in the standard model, this is 1-4%. Okay, good. So the theory, the standard model, what people say is that this is essentially is 1 plus correction of the muon mass squared divided by mp squared. And if you put the numbers, they say it's known to 10 to the minus 4. Okay. That is, of course, a little bit suspicious because this is an extremely small theoretical uncertainty. And I think it's not correct. So, of course, what you would have is you have photon radiations from the muon legs. And so you get collinear logs of that kind of form. And that induces an order 1 effect, order 1% effect, roughly. Okay. Of course, this is somehow taken care of in the analysis. Because of course they run photos, they have a detector simulation with photons, but it's not really taken care of in the theoretical calculation that simply computes only QCD but nothing else. Okay, so you can again kind of estimate that. Yeah, so there's a calculation for the inclusive case, and in the inclusive case you can compute that. Assuming that you see the full collinear log. So the collinear log is really cut off by the electron mass or by the muon mass, which is probably not correct in an experimental setup. Yeah, but even in Baba and Bell, it's not fully understood how this is really done. But you can do this calculation in this case, and you can compute this rate differences or the ratio of rates, and you see that you get something, it's not 1, but it develops a shape. Okay. And you get the minus 4% effect here and a plus 14% for high Q squared. Okay. So the effects are certainly small at the percent level. But if I draw this in now, again, this is extremely naive. You see you go in the right direction. Okay. So it goes a little bit closer to the experiment. Okay. Again, as I said, of course, things are much more complicated because this ratio is, I mean, people, theorists call it this RK ratio, but it's not what LHCb really measures. They measure a double ratio involving shape psi and then shape psi decaying to leptons and a kaon. Okay? And that is necessary because for each electron pair that LHCb sees, they see 50 muon pairs. So you need a mode to normalize, so they need a lot of leptons, okay? So they do this, okay? And then they correct for this, of course, using Monte Carlo, so you use photos, and then they also have a detector simulation which simulates Bremsstrahlung photons, okay? Good. So the question is that I would have is, I mean, if you look at the standard model prediction, yeah, and instead of saying it's 1, if you simulate the signal, yeah, and if I pass it through this detector, what spectrum would you see? Okay, and I'm pretty sure you would not see a flat line, but you would see something else. Okay, of course, you certainly don't get 25%, yeah, but it would be nice to have a better understanding of this. Okay.
LHCb is only measuring a small region anyway in Q squared.
Yeah, yeah. So if you integrate over the whole, if I take that and if I integrate over whole Q squared, then in fact it really would be 1 because then all these collinear logs have to drop out.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be 1 at every Q squared.
No. Yeah, that's what some
people. The error of that calculation.
Well, so this calculation has QCD only, yeah, and this is not a calculation at all because. I mean, it's clear that that's the only thing is if you neglect all the masses, that's the only one thing that is left over, yeah? I mean, but if you put QED, I'm pretty sure you don't get 1, yeah? You get 1 plus minus something, 1%.
At Q squared, you get 1. It's a neutral system decaying what? Into. At every Q squared, you should get 1.
Why?
Because it's a neutral system. It's like Z star decaying to a leptonic pair.
If you integrate or if you're fully...
If you integrate it with the angles, that's all.
If you integrate over whole Q squared, you get
no,
it.
No, but with the angles. Z fixed. Invariant mass
really?
Fixed.
You don't shift.
Integrate it with the angles.
This don't shift the invariant mass?
Invariant mass of what?
Yeah, they measure in two. They measure.
The decaying product, right?
They measure Q squared and they measure in the invariant mass of the K pi.
So there is a distribution of invariant mass of mu plus mu minus square. Right?
Yes.
So this changes. But the invariant mass of the Z, in your case, or gamma star,
okay.
is fixed. So it depends how you reconstruct the event. If you take
yeah.
mu plus, mu minus gamma,
Absolutely, and this I don't know. So you would have to do this with a Monte Carlo, I guess. I'm not saying that you can explain that, for sure not this 25%. But I think there are corrections to this, or you would disagree on this.
Depends on the observer.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But it's not that this is a fully inclusive measurement. It has cuts on it, and there's radiation. Of course, these guys take this into account. Yeah. But it has not been taken into account on the theoretical side. So this one doesn't include any photon radiation and no cuts.
Basically, the double ratio is you measure J psi to mu mu k and J psi to EEK and make sure that's one.
Yes.
And do the same thing in the KE and the
yes.
mu mu. Yes. But Q squared defined.
Just the invariant mass of L plus L minus.
Yeah, so it doesn't capture the photon. Yes. There was a radiation.
There is no photon.
There are corrections.
I mean, there's a radiated tail in the B decay. There's a correction to the Q squared, and I calculated on that, but that's not a part.
Yeah.
We don't observe a photon.
Yeah, exactly. You don't observe photons, but
so you request no photons in order to get the invariant mass to come out right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. For the B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you also measure these two.
So there's the Sudikoff probability of having no photons, right?
Yeah.
And that's not exactly the same for the muon cases. Absolutely. For the electron case, because the logarithms are different in
exactly.
the cases.
Yeah. So there is some left.
You normalize, get the J psi right.
Right. So that's the J. That's Sudikoff is at the J psi mass, and then there's the Sudikoff at the other Q squared that you measure. I don't know how far apart, how close they are. How close are they?
I don't know. That's
a no. I mean, I'm not saying
the Sudikoffs are a little bit different. I mean, they're probably not, 24% different.
No, they're certainly not, and certainly this measurement is absolutely fine, but it doesn't correspond to what theorists compute, yeah? There's no QED radiation, it's all fully inclusive, I mean, there's no calculation at all, yeah? You look at the rate, and then you say, look, there's mb squared over, that's left over, and that's a muon squared divided by mb squared, that's left over. There's no QED radiation or nothing, but that's not really what these guys measure, right? It's a very different measurement, yeah?
Is it a single log or a double log?
Well, a single log, I guess, yeah. I mean, if I do this, at least in this inclusive case, it's a single log.
They say there were no photons.
No. In the other case, in the inclusive measurement, well, the plot that I showed, they do have, and they have some kind of a cone where they either counted or not counted and so on, yeah? And I'm using this at some kind of a... I mean, in order to get an idea of how big this is, yeah. But of course, it's probably very different if you really would do the correct calculation. Yeah. But the only thing that I want to say, it's not 1 to order 10 to the minus 4. Anyway, good. The other thing that you should ask, so if it's new physics, so if this is all no problem, yeah, so what I said is all immaterial, yeah, then the question is, if it's new physics, then, and that's a slide, because that's what Brian Battelle said, yeah, if it's new physics, then it should nail it, okay, so that should look like that. So does it nail it? Well, so people used, so, Altman, Sofer, and Straub, so, and other groups, they used to fit these, for example, to 88 different observables. And the best fit is if you have only one Wilson coefficient, C9, which is a vector operator, and you get a p-value of 11.3%, okay? The standard model p-value is 2.1%. Yeah, so it's not a really huge improvement. I think you can't really say it nails it. Yeah. The second best solution is a solution which has C9 is equal to C10. So the vector is equal to the axial vector or minus the axial vector. And that's a 7.1. All the other ones are faring standard model-like. Okay. So these are the two solutions. But I think it's fair to say that no... one is really spot on, okay? In particular, what you can also do is you can extract, make a fit for all the different bins, okay? And so that is the bin, if you do a global fit to all data, and then you can make a fit to the different bins of data. And if in the case of new physics, yeah, you should not find any Q-squared dependence, yeah, because this C9 is simply a number. Okay, good. So, and that's what you see here. So that's the extraction that you get if you do a Q in the, fit to all data, you find -1, and if you fit to a bin, then you should find a line. Yeah. Okay. Now it's up to you if you say that that is a line. Within error bars, it's a line, but for me, this has a slope, and that is what you would expect if you have an impact of shape psi resonances. Then you would think that it should grow the effect here. That's, I think, what you can see here. Okay, of course, again, within errors, it can also be a line. Good. Okay, so what did we learn? Another thing is that only the real parts of the Wilson coefficients are bounded. In order to bound these imaginary pieces, you would have to measure CP violation, and there's essentially only one measurement which measures the one that is relevant for B2S gamma, or the exclusive mode, and that is in K-star gamma. So that's, I think, an important goal, that you try to get CP violation in these modes. Okay. And also, you can look at the ratio, because that's a very clean way to extract at low Q squared. You can extract the Wilson coefficients C7 prime, so the right-handed photon. So the second main message is, if you look at SU2 U1 invariant operators, then there are essentially only three possible ways. The vector operator should be, or the change in the vector operator should be much smaller than the one in the axial vector. Okay, that is not the case. Okay, think about the Z coupling to muons in the standard model. So this is 1 - 4 sine squared theta, which is practically zero. Okay, or you should get that these coefficients are the same up to a sine. Okay, and both are not really preferred. This means that you cannot get this deviation in the MSSM. You cannot get it in the simple-minded realization of compositeness. Lepto quark models are also not favored. Okay, so you can get it in set prime models. Okay, and what you have to achieve, you have to have a vector-like coupling to muons. Okay, there are two models on the market that essentially can do this. There is something which is called 331 model, which is you extend your gauge group up to an SU3L and then U1X. Or there's something where you gauge muon and tau number. Yeah, and then you're also guaranteed that you get the vector current only. In this case, you have to choose a certain charge normalization. Then you get this on the lepton side. On the quark side, what you have to do is you have to use the freedom in order to get some minimal flavor violating alignment. Okay, you can do this, but it's simply a choice. It's not really dynamically done. Okay. In the other case, which are the more attractive models, you get at tree level you have muons and taus coupled vectorial to the set prime. There's no electron coupling. And then there are two models on the market, either the quark vertex you get by mixing with vector-like quarks, either you leave this free, then you can dial the couplings, or you can use horizontal symmetries, so additional U1s, yeah, where you gauge these new degrees of freedom, and then you can forbid or allow a certain couplings. In this case, you can get the P500 can be explained by a set prime that is 7 TV. Minimal models have a problem that they have a Landau-like pole at 4 TV. Yeah, so your gauge couplings blow up. So you have to fix this. You can fix this and get even neutrino masses out. There can be no explanation of RK, since the lepton couplings are universal. In the other case, it depends how you do the quarks, the couplings on the quark side. If you dial them, then you only know that the set prime has to be larger than 40 GeV. In the other case, if you have horizontal symmetries, then you know that the set prime has to couple to light quarks, and then you get the bound from tight sheds. Okay? In this case, you can explain both P5 prime and RK. Okay. In fact, you get the, so that's the first model. So these are the nicer models, I think, with this gauged symmetry. You have a lot of constraints, for example, so here's the set prime mass, here's this new gauge coupling. There is parameter space where in principle you can get G-2 by set prime exchange, okay, then this is later on forbidden by something else. There is something which is called, there's also an anomaly which I didn't mention, but it should have been mentioned, there's also an anomaly in tau decay, so it's 2 or 3 sigma deviation. And you can get this here on this green band. There's a direct bound. So in this model, there's no coupling to light quarks. Okay, this is simply set to 0. But you have to couple to muons. So you get set to 4 leptons. Okay, and that's the LHC bound, but it's rather weak. There's something which is nice. Which these guys came up, which is the limits from neutrino trident production. Yeah, so you look at neutrino scattering and producing 2 muons. And that excludes, for example, this G-2 solution. Okay, so that rules this out. There's also a strong constraint also in these models is always if you have this set prime, since you have couplings to BS, you can also have 2 BS set prime vertices, and you get mixing, okay? BS mixing, and this always limits the amount of parameter space here. So that's excluded here. Last but not least, you can also exchange the set prime if you have set decaying to muons, and then there's also a bound from the width of the set, essentially. But there's parameter space here, yeah. So a line essentially, MZ versus G prime, where you have all can satisfy everything, yeah. And this thing can be really light or it can be rather heavy. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, does it explain G minus two the muon out there?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it's not perfect.
No, it's not perfect. So that's always excluded by this trident production. Right. Okay. If I fix the couplings by horizontal symmetries, then you have to couple to QQ bar, and then you get bounds from tight shed production, and then they tell you that the set prime should be heavier than, say, 2.5 TeV. Okay. Good. But generically, I mean, if you buy all this, there is certainly room for this. Okay. And it would be very difficult to always test this, yeah. So by other means, yeah. So it could only show up there, but it would not show up anywhere else. Okay.
But there's a mass bump inside the zeta form u. So as you increase the
yes, but I think it's a very very weak constraint, yeah. So it's now 40 GeV, and I don't know how. How good this. So I think it's very difficult. Of course, the more attractive models, I think, from a theoretical point of view, are these models where you have couplings to light quarks. The other one is a little bit a cheat, saying, OK, quark side is absolutely free for light quarks. Because also this, you can also not really decouple this new vector-like matter completely, right? They have to have mass, and then you would see these states. Yeah, there can only be a whatever loop factor between. Yeah. So, yeah. So if the set prime is 100 GeV, then you would expect to see this vector-like state, say, at a TeV or so. Yeah. Good. However, so that's the last part. LHCb can do much more than these. Okay, there are 33 papers in the QCD Electroweak and Exotic Working Group, and here I have a list. Yeah, so they, for example, looked at the WZ production in the forward region. They determined the weak mixing angle. They have observation of top and bottom production, the forward region. They looked for light dimuon resonances. They even have limits on a neutral Higgs decaying to tau pairs. Okay, and there are much more papers. Yeah? So there's only a bunch of them. Let me say something about TT bar production. This, I think, is rather nice. So LHCb has seen TT bar production both in TT bar and also single top. And they have, in fact, made a 5.4 sigma observation. Okay, and it agrees nicely with next leading order QCD.
Okay,
that's, I think, nice. We looked a little bit at BB bar and charm production. And so in the case of TT bar production, if you look at this, then what they can have measured is they have measured the asymmetry, so the forward central asymmetry. And in the case of top, which they can also do maybe at some point, you're fully dominated by QCD. So electroweak is rather small, say 20%, okay? And now we know QCD very well, up to next leading order, due to great effort of some people in the audience. If you turn to a BB bar, then you get contributions not only from QCD, but if you look at the invariant mass of the BB bar pair, you get also contribution from the set going on shell, okay? So it has a much nicer or much more enhanced electroweak structure. So it's a really more sensitive probe of electroweak physics than TT bar.
Okay.
And another thing is it has been measured in contrast to TT bar in the forward region by LHCb. There is also measurement by D0 and CDF. Okay, so they really saw this. And now you can make a prediction, and this is what we did, including electroweak effects and QCD up to next leading order only. And you see that the first thing that you see is that if you plot the asymmetry, you see that here in this pin where the set sits, you really see an enhancement. Okay, so it's not only a straight line that you would get from QCD, but here you see the interference of the set going on shell. Okay. Notice the errors are, of course, large still of LHCb, but that will improve. Okay. You also see that the theory uncertainty is rather large still. Yeah, so it's not extremely small. We tried to get some next-to-next leading order prediction, some approximation, but failed because it doesn't work in this case, getting this approximation. Yeah. Okay. But good, it's already a measurement, and you have a rather good theory, and you can probably even improve that. And in fact, you can learn something, so there are implications of this, though there is no really dedicated analysis. If you take, for example, a lightish axi gluon, okay, then you see that this would change the asymmetry. Yeah, okay. And this is excluded by the Tevatron measurements, for example. And it also excludes axigluon solution of the Tevatron TT bar asymmetry. Okay, so there are some solutions that have a very light axigluon, and these are kind of under pressure by this measurement. Okay, so here's my summary. I think all over LHCb really performed extremely nice and very beautiful measurements of the phase of BS mixing, for example, like Sheldon said. Then the measurements of B sub S and B sub D to mu plus mu minus, measurement of B to K and B to K star mu plus mu minus RK. They measured B to D tau nu. They have also a very nice measurement of VUB in lambda B going to proton, a muon, and a neutrino. And altogether, I think we are now really approaching or already in the flavor precision era. And some of these measurements are a serious challenge for theory. Yeah, so some of them are very nice. And I think theory is not in such a great shape in all of them. And improvements are needed, certainly, to fully exploit the existing or also future data. Okay. But I think it's also important to keep in mind that LHCb has a program and a growing program beyond standard flavor, and they have flavor tagging, and that's rather nice. So they can tag BB bar And they have measured in this way, for example, the forward center asymmetry. They also looked at W plus chat and W plus charm and bottom. And more certainly to come in run 2, they probably measure CC bar and maybe even the Higgs. Yeah, who knows? And I think it's really something that you should think outside the box, but it's not, because it's not only a pure flavor experiment. Thank you.
Just a comment. You mentioned that Bell has only one result on this ratio, which is a thesis, Kistar Mimimoto, Kistar E. So, in fact, there is another update which is coming rather soon. I'm actually reviewing another thesis. So it should come for this LHC E conference, which is in April.
Yeah, I mean, I think this. This BSLL modes at Baba and Bell are somehow, I mean, I think people didn't really pay that much attention, and I think there are not a lot of measurements, yeah, for whatever reason. I think Bell has no official inclusive BSLL measurement, yeah. So they only have it in thesis and so on. So I don't know why this ever.
This would be officially released.
Yeah, so this would be nice, and I think it's clear that their theory can be better and is better. Yeah. So and I mean, if you see something similar, then.
It's kind of a little more, I mean, you do these some exclusive final statements and.
No, I know it's completely borderline to do, and it's very difficult, and in particular it's not really an inclusive measurement because you sum, and then there's certainly uncertainty also related to this because you're, I don't know, you see 70% of the modes or something clearly. But I think this is a mode that has not been studied in full detail as it should have been, because I think you know, it's clearly very difficult, yes, but other modes have been studied in more detail, yeah. And yeah.
All right, I guess that's it for today. Thanks, Uli. So,